don't mind, we'll chant a little further. As you all know, we're known as the Hare Krishna people, and that's because we chant Hare Krishna. And we chant Hare Krishna for a reason. It's called in Sanskrit the Yuga Dharma. Yuga Dharma means the religion for this age. And the mantra itself is an eternal sound vibration. Nowadays the word mantra has become a very common phrase. People use the word mantra very freely. In fact, media use these words all the time. Pandit, guru, mantra, everything gets adopted or brought in. But the real meaning of mantra is more than words. Here you see the mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra, and it's made of three words, Hare, Krishna, and Rama. And these names are the names of God. Each of them have a meaning, and they're put into this configuration, which is 16 words altogether and 32 syllables. So when we chant this, the nature of the mantra is that it is God's presence in transcendental sound. We often tend to have make the statement that God is everywhere. So how is God everywhere? Well, we know that ultimately everything is God's creation. So everything being God's creation means that everything is God's energy. He's in this floor. He's also in this microphone stand. And he's within you. He's within us. But God has also a separate existence aside from him being present everything through his diverse energies by which he also creates things and maintains things, and ultimately everything gets destroyed. So he's also present in his names. And he's present in his names in a little different way than he's present in this floor, is that he's personally present. The personal presence of God is possible by the grace of God. We live in a world of duality. This is a microphone, but you could call it a carrot. And if that's how whoever invented the microphone started calling it a carrot, of course carrots would have had to be called something else. But it's a convention. And we live in a world of convention where things have arbitrary designation. But ultimately, this world of names, all of these names, don't really quite mean anything. So if carrots weren't vegetables, but it was a new name, then we would all be saying that this is a carrot. And it would make really no difference to the utility of this microphone. But that's relative. That's because there's a difference between the object and its name. But in the absolute realm, there's actually no difference between a thing, its name, or different aspects of that thing. So there's no difference, for instance, between, in this case, in this instance, between the name of God and God. My name is Shivaram Swami. My name could be Rama Shiva Swami. My name was Peter Latai. But what difference did it make? It's just a name. And the name could change. And you all have names, but people change their names. And it doesn't make any difference to them as a person. So that's the concept of relativity, which Einstein explained very nicely. But in the terms of absoluteness, when you say a name, then that thing is actually present within the name. And we call it, for need of expression, we say that that's a mantra. So mantra is a sound vibration that's actually then non-different than what it represents. So, if the word microphone was absolute, then I say microphone, and here's the microphone. But you notice it doesn't work like that. I have to use this microphone. It would also come in handy for the shopping bill, because then all you have to do is sit down at the table, and then you just start rattling off. Now we're having vegetables, and we're having pakoras, and everything just appears because the word is no different. But it's not like that. Because we don't have that power, we're not empowered. But consider that there is another realm. There is a, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would use the word anti-material realm, where a thing is no different than its name. When the thing is present, then its name is also directly associated with it, and when you say the name, then the thing also appears, but there's a science to it. So similarly, there's a science to chanting Hare Krishna. And the process of developing that science is that you chant the representation of that mantra as it appears to us in the form of these letters and words, but when one becomes adept at chanting, then one actually realizes that Krishna is not different from the mantra, and one becomes, that's what's called being God realized is. It's a very similar phenomena. For instance, in room next door you have the deity room, you have very nice deities of Radha and Krishna. It's the same concept of the deity, which is a little foreign to Western culture and Western religions, but is very traditional in India. And very often the misunderstanding is that these deities are statues, or a little more advanced than that, that the representation, they represent God. And, well, we're deifying them by worshiping them, and that helps us develop our devotion. So neither of these concepts are actually correct. The fact is that God is present in the form of those deities. And not just these deities, there are a lot of deities in this house. And there's a lot of deities in the United Kingdom, there's a lot of deities in the world. But people often make this challenge, well, if God exists, why don't you show him? Right, well, then here he is. No, I'm not saying show me a statue. Why doesn't he stand in front of me? You mean you want me to show him in air? If God is present in air, that's more credible than if he's present in stone. What makes him present in air more credible than there? You have to have the eyes, particularly eyes, to actually see, just like you have to have the ears to be able to hear the actual form of the Lord enter through the medium of transcendental sound. So it's a spiritual culture, and that cultivating that spiritual understanding is called sadhana. And it requires investment of time, quality time, energy, lifestyle. And when the lifestyle is harmonious with the chanting of the mantra, what is actually required to develop the expertise, it's called mantra siddhi, then one develops in understanding the real potency or the nature of mantras. Just to give you an idea, that in days of yore, if you read the Mahabharata, someone here has not read the Mahabharata, or someone's read the Mahabharata. Yes, a lot of people read them. So in the Mahabharata, you read about astras. Astras are weapons. They are very powerful weapons. Some people say that Australia, you've heard of that place, it's somewhere down under over there, penal colony. And it's the name Australia came from that this was where the astras were being practiced, that's why it's a wasteland. The only The coastline is the only sort of habitable place. The rest is all desert. So these astras were weapons that were created not by not bombs in the way that we manufacture bombs nowadays, but they were just manifest just through sound. It's another type of production. So you produce a bomb with all kinds of, well, now you produce atom bombs, so you produce with all kinds of uranium or radioactive material and put it all together, very complex thing. Or if you have that, if you learn another type of technology, another type of system, you can also unleash, because ultimately what's that bomb doing? It's unleashing the power of the atom. If it's a hydrogen bomb, it's a hydrogen atom or different types of other bombs. So how to unleash the power of the hydrogen? You can either do it by this mechanical way, or you can also do it just through sound. And they would do it through sound. So in the Mahabharata, there are all series of different types of weapons, which were just manifest just through sound. But once again, you have to be qualified. It's not a matter of just repeating the words. You actually have to have a corresponding lifestyle, and you have to be able to perfect the pronunciation of the mantra itself, and it requires a certain type of purity of the heart. So, you know, interestingly, Germans were real fans of India and Indian culture, Sanskrit and Vedic culture when they first went there, much more so than the English. And they were studying. They were aware of these mantras, and Hitler had them studying these mantras, how to actually produce nuclear weapons. They couldn't do it because they weren't really Aryans. You really have to be an Aryan in order to be able to make it work. So they weren't really Aryans. But they knew that it's there. And of course that science, is it practicable nowadays? No, not really, because you won't find that type of king or kshatriya, as you know they're called, warriors. Nowadays the politicians, they sit back in parliament or congress or wherever and they tell the soldiers, go out and fight. So these soldiers were the ones who were going out. They weren't saying, go ahead, go forward. They're saying, follow me. And they were the ones who were out in the battlefield. But anyway, that's a whole different affair. That was just to give an example of how mantras actually manifest extraordinary powers and things according to what is the power that is invested in them. And in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the full power of the Supreme Lord is present, and he is also personally present in that sound. So we'll chant a little, and that was just a little introduction to hopefully inspire everyone to chant along with us. And it's a sort of responsive chanting, not sort of, it is. And we keep the mantra simple. And now I'm going to sit down in a minute. Thank you. Hare Krishna.